Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Johnny Miller is younger than I thought. I think of Johnny Miller as a complete contemporary of Jack Nicklaus, who is in his late 70s.
He's
now.
Younger. No, he's younger.
He's 71.
Yeah.
Johnny,
yeah.
And he's just his... The arrival the other day that prompted him to finally do this was the arrival of his 24th grandchild.
Wow.
His 24th...
Miller's putting in some work.
Just knowing their names is enough to tax you.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, we're live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest, in Friendship Heights, in the District of Columbia, where we serve breakfast. In fact, we serve food all day and well into the night.
Yes.
We are a full-service, for-profit restaurant. People in the audience, thank you for coming. We have Gary Braun is here. Gene McManus is here. Michael Kornheiser is apparently at the Murray League Golf Championships are today, so he's not here.
That's right.
He is coaching that team. Nigel will run the board, do the news. Gene wanted to say hi.
I just want to say thank you to everybody for your nice notes.
And then we'll start to laugh for the rest of the show.
That's all I can say.
Jeannie said, I can only do 4 seconds on that.
Yes.
So we have a note from Peter Jennings, not that Peter Jennings, the president of Dow Japan and Dow Korea, who says, a special delivery gift for you and your great team. We designed these to inspire and motivate the Dow team here. They are hats that say, make Japan great again. And they are the red and white that you're expecting. And he said, I sent one to Prime Minister Abe. I think my thank you letter from the Prime Minister must have been lost in the mail or lost in translation. Please make sure you wear yours when you come over for the Olympics, working on matching ties. And one is autographed for Saliz, as we gave the rest out today. We're grateful for that. And from Stan and Debbie, Ralph, R-O-U-F-F, in Bowie, Maryland, we saw this and immediately thought of you. Please display and or use with your coffee or Johnny Walker Blue in the upcoming season.
Wow, he saw. I just assumed it was custom made.
No, I guess this is my Hallmark Christmas movie watching mug. That will have an honored place in my home. And by honored, I mean I don't want to see it.
In a million pieces at the fireplace.
I don't want to see it.
I'm surprised you haven't destroyed it yet.
Not yet. Carol's going to be able to get her hands on it for at least 10 seconds. I'm okay with that. Let us start today with the baseball. I know you want me to get to the basketball.
We're saving that for the second hour,
It's early.
The third hour.
It's early. I mean, I know that ESPN and TNT spent hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion, to put the NBA on TV. But there are certain things that are a little too early in the year.
It's a soft launch anyway last night, isn't it?
That's one of them. So we will get to that. Let's start with a game that I watched almost in its entirety because it started too early for me to watch the beginning. When I got home, I turned it on. The Red Sox beat the Astros. I think the Astros are the best team in baseball, but the Red Sox beat them last night. It was a close game for a long period of time. It was tied at various points in this game. And then the Red Sox got rich when the Astros put in Roberto Osuna. And they put him in the game, and he went to 2 strikes with almost everybody. And he let up 2 two-out singles or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he got some outs. It's 2 outs. It's 2 on.
We got 2 outs first.
Yeah. Oh, 2 outs, then 2 on. Then he hits a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He hits a guy on in a very odd place, like right on his shoe.
Yeah, just grazed
back
it.
Shoe.
Very, very odd. So the guy's a lefty batter. Who is that?
Brock Holt.
Okay, so Holt is up there, and he's lefty, and Osuna delivers, and it's low and inside, and the catcher catches the ball. And you go, okay, it's a ball, and we're going to go to 3-2. But then Holt says, I got hit. And on the replay, when they slow it down enough, he got hit on the shoe. Do you remember a guy named Nipper Jones? Nipper Jones was a guy for, I think, either the Braves or the Mets in the 1960s. And he got hit, and the black shoe polish.
That's right.
The black shoe polish
that
was evident on the ball. So he was awarded first base, and it had play in who won or who lost. And I'm fuzzy on this, but if somebody looks up Nipper Jones, you'll find that. Chipper Jones, but Nipper Jones.
Wasn't that in the series in 69 against the Orioles?
I believe it might be, and I think he was on the Mets. But
yes.
I'm not certain.
He was a Mets player,
So they didn't have replay then, but they had a
shoe
black
polish.
White, and they had shoe polish. In this particular case, you can see it.
Yeah.
It grazes his foot. It does no damage. But you can see it. So then he is awarded first base. Then Osuna hits the next guy, putting in a run. So now you're down one or two. Are you down two or are you down one at that point to the Red Sox? If you
down
used
two.
The,
down two.
Down two at that
point.
And
yes.
Then Jackie Bradley Jr. comes up and boom, see you later. See you later.
Why did they keep Osuna in after he's hit back-to-back batters?
They kept him in long enough to raise his ERA to 67.5. Five earned in two-thirds of an inning. That game is over. I'm hesitant to say the series is over. I mean, I don't want to say that because I think Houston is really good. Charlie Morton, though, who starts game four.
That's right.
Charlie Morton hasn't pitched at all in the postseason.
No.
Not at all. And they can't get to Verlander. No, you can't. You gotta wait to game five. Now, even if Boston wins, there still is a game five. It's a 2-1 series, yeah. So there still is a game five. But what did you think we're going to have Richie on later. My first question to Richie is, do they let starters go anymore? Or do they just take them out no matter what? So,
well, it depends on who you are. I mean, on the other side, can you still hear me? That's funny. I can't hear myself.
Can anybody hear
I can oddly not hear myself. I was going to say, on the other side, you have a team where it's a race to the bullpen
right.
in Milwaukee. But
right. You can't name any of their starters.
No.
Because they're not, and they're not in long enough to do it.
So I'm sorry. I have a vastly different existence than you, which yesterday consisted of leaving work early to go to a cross-country match in Olney, to leave that to go to a soccer game in Poolsville.
Okay, so you missed that.
And when I got home, that was over.
So let me get to Jeannie watched it, and I watched it. I didn't understand. I mean, the four people who are managing in this series are rather young. And rather
yes.
inexperienced. I think Dave Roberts may be in his third year. Cora is in his first year. Council, second or third year. Hinch, fourth or fifth year. They're not graybeards in that regard. I didn't understand why Hinch took out Keuchel. Because they bring in a guy, Smith, and boom!
Boom, home run.
Boom, Pierce, right?
Yeah, Pierce.
By the way, Boston has guys I've never heard of. Boston plays a lot.
They do.
That's also true about almost all these teams. They play a lot of people. There doesn't appear to be a set lineup anymore. But did you watch it and you say, well, why are you taking out Keuchel? Keuchel's pretty good.
Well, to be honest, I watched last night with great interest, but I don't know any of these people because I haven't watched
any
sports in the last 3 months. I've
okay.
watched Law & Order reruns.
Well,
that's
you can talk to Will
Barnum. That's all I can handle,
right.
Okay?
Right.
But yes, I didn't know anybody on either team. But I didn't even know about the whole controversy about Osuna. I had to kind of go back and look what that was all about.
Here's what I know. You can't most of the time get Alex Bregman out.
No, you can't.
No, he gets on base one way or another almost all the time. But so the series, I guess, shifts to Boston. I mean, they're up.
Yeah.
They're up 2-1.
Yeah, I mean.
And they won 108 games.
They were good. I mean,
they won 108 games. We had this question, the PTI question at the beginning of the series, was should Boston be favored? And Wilbon goes, no, because Wilbon doesn't like any team that touches I-95. No, they shouldn't be favored because Houston is a better team. And I said, I will grant you that I think Houston is going to win the series. But yes, Boston should be favored. They won 108 games. And by the way, they had three teams in their division who were like 20 games over 500. So yeah, they ought to be favored. They scored more runs than any team in baseball. They ought to be favored, and they are now up.
That playing all the guys thing, isn't that a direct result of the whole sabermetrics?
Yeah, I would.
I mean, it's like you can always justify any move now.
Teams are being run. I know Richard will say this. Teams are being run by general managers more than field managers. General managers describe the philosophy that they want.
Compositionally.
And then they hire a field manager who will execute that. The days of the Buck Showalters are limited, you know, because nobody wants to give over that kind of authority. In the second game might still be going on.
I think
that game started a little bit after 9 o'clock at night Eastern.
Right.
And I bailed out after about four innings. I was so thrilled to see Gio Gonzalez throw 25 pitches in the first inning and give up a run. And then on the first batter in the second inning, a bouncer comebacker, oi, my ankle. And you could see it. Man, his ankle caved in.
Ooh.
It caved in. He tried to pitch. He couldn't pitch. I watched a couple of more innings, but my heart wasn't in it because Gio was not torturing me in the way that he had tortured me the last 3 years as a member of the Nationals. And then I found out that game ended in the 13th. What was the time that that ended?
Five hours. It was
so after 2 o'clock in the morning, Eastern.
Yeah, started at 9.
I'm not going the route on that.
You're probably just
and
waking
Cody
up.
Bellinger apparently, and that's another lineup. The Dodgers lineup changed. Like you'd look at Puig and you go, he's got to play every day. Well, he doesn't. Jock Peterson. Well, he doesn't. These guys don't play every day. Cody Bellinger apparently made a great defensive play in the 10th.
Yes,
I saw that on replay,
which is after midnight, and then a great hit in the 13th to score Machado.
That's right.
So that series is now 2-2, right?
Correct. That's,
they're going into game is game five tonight?
Yes.
Oh, we have two games today?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So,
and I believe they might be the early one today because
Red Sox are late.
Red Sox are late, yeah. So.
Oh, so Bill Isaacson will be able to stay up and watch.
Yes.
That's another 40-inch box score. I mean, at
which
you
is
know, the Dodgers, Dodgers threw nine. Through nine pitchers.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, extra inning game, sure. But
oh,
but a 2-1 game.
Did Hader pitch last night?
Even at 13 innings?
I was way gone by then.
My comp is dead, and I was done too. Nigel can check it out. My computer's all acted up. But a 2-1, even in the National League, even at 13 innings, a 2-1 game shouldn't be 5 hours. That's crazy.
It's become like college football.
Yeah.
Where it goes, college football goes for 4 hours.
4 hours, right.
4 hours. And it's become like it goes on. And now I think the saving grace is that it's the playoffs. And if you like baseball, you watch it. But it lasts, God, it's so long. Yeah. It is just so long. So if they're the early game, well, it's early for LA.
Yeah, 5:09. So that really is an early game for Los Angeles. John Hader did pitch one inning, two hits.
Josh Hader.
Two strikeouts.
Josh Hader.
Josh Hader.
And not Bill.
Not Bill Hader.
I like Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's funny.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Nipper Jones, it was Cleon Jones.
Cleon Jones. He was the Mets. He's the Mets left fielder.
Yes, with the shoe polish incident.
So and that's it was a World Series game?
Yes, it was in 1969.
Shoe polish?
Yes.
And Gil Hodges was the manager.
Yes, that's right.
And he said, check the ball.
And it was game five.
And hit him in the shoe.
It was game five, which was the clinching game, so that was a rather dramatic
game. It was vague in my memory, but I knew it was
pulling that one way out from the past.
I knew it was a shoe polish thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. That kid was wearing red shoes last night, and I'm not sure there's a polish situation on those.
No.
Because people change their shoes. Unlike in the old days where you had to keep your shoes, they change shoes every day now.
Between innings sometimes.
So
I wonder if they even sell shoe polish anymore.
But they didn't need it.
Yeah.
They didn't need it because you could tell.
I grew up in a house where my dad had...
I like to polish shoes.
The people who know will know, and other people this will make no sense, but my dad had, I guess I would call it that polishing machine.
Oh,
where like
yeah.
on
yeah,
either
yeah.
side, you had like a red side and a black side, yeah. and you push the button.
Yeah. Those are relatively new. I used my hands and polish.
And my dad would do that too. Fond memories of my dad polishing
shoes. Well, and when you had saddle shoes, you had that liquid shoe polish.
It's
like a paintbrush, like you dabbed it on.
Yeah, yeah.
Whitewashed.
All right, did I get to the NBA? I guess I
didn't. I think you did.
I think you covered
it. Time to go.
I just, you know, the Celtics beat the 76ers. And here are some shooting percentages you'll like. Markelle Fultz, who can't shoot and now has a new jump shot, was 2-for-7. Kyrie Irving, who you thought could shoot, was 2-for-14. The Celtics beat the Sixers all the time. People are making the Sixers. Sixers have two players. They got Ben Simmons, who's really good, and Joel Embiid, who talks a lot. And they're fine players. They're not going to beat the Celtics.
You saw what he said, what Embiid said after the game, right?
No, what he said.
He said it's not a rivalry.
No,
they beat us all the time.
8-2 in the last 10.
Yeah.
So it's not a rivalry. And then the late game, which may still be going on for all I know, the Warriors beat the Thunder. And you know, raise your hand if you care. I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't. The Warriors are going, if not win the championship, the Warriors are going to make the championships. Everybody knows that because they're the best team.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not get all excited in October about something that doesn't end until the end of June. But Wilbon is, boy, he's out there carrying the flag. He is. He's carrying the flag.
He's a fan of the league.
He is. So we will take a break. Richard Justice will join us. He was at the early game.
Yes.
He was at the Red Sox Astros. Right in
Houston,
because that's where he lives.
That's where he lives.
Right. All right, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ZipRecruiter ad. Please note there are two script options, A and B.
And not sure that's intended for the audience.
I can use either version.
Nigel
and I have decided on
just
the B version.
Just put it in front of him, he reads it.
Yeah, we go to plan B.
The B version, yes. And I start. We can read responsibly if you want, if I hand out the prayer books. But you know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, and that's underlined, education and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. So you don't have to sort through the wrong resumes. You don't have to wait for the right candidates to apply. And so consequently, and I add that word myself, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the United States. And this rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Now, I'm going to assume if you want to try it for free, it's because you have people to hire.
I would think
because
if you try it for free
and you think it's a pony ride, you're going to be making a mistake.
Probably,
I hope you're hiring. ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TONY. ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Greetings again from the Southwest. Jim Lipson, Lynbrook High School class of 1972. Go Owls. Lynbrook Owls, next door to the Hewlett Blue Jackets. From the Wayback Machine, offering a couple more original tunes from our Welcome to the Family CD. The one we're going to play later in the show is Bluegrass Gumbo. This is called Cold Beer to Go. It's sung by the bass player Beverly Seckinger and written by her good friend Virginia Scharf. It's a great little swing tune. And Jim writes, as for me, I can be heard playing conga, singing harmonies, and playing a little harmonica on Cold Beer. And while I'm certainly no Mitch Albom, I can only hope we rise to the esteemed level of just another lousy band. All the best, Jim. And we will play, we'll hold on to that because we'll play his next song later on. Let me just say this, though, and I'll say it twice. Friday, October 19th, which is this Friday in a couple of days, they will be in Tucson at Monterey Court, where they're playing one of their semi-annual fundraisers for the annual Tucson Folk Festival, perhaps the oldest free festival of its kind, 34 years running now. We'll have our usual cavalcade of special guests joining us on stage for the show. So if you're in the Tucson area, on Friday you can go to Monterey Court. Richard Justice, who is in the Houston area and gets to sleep at home at night for three games because the Red Sox are in Houston, joins us now from MLB.com. And I said this at the top of the show that I was going to ask you this to begin with. And the first note that I took, well, the first note that I took is, why did Hinch take out Dallas Keuchel when the next pitch was a home run? But except for Houston mainly, but maybe Houston as well, most teams no longer seem to value the traditional concept of what you and I and other people who are old grew up with, the starting pitcher who gave everything he had, and if he didn't last into the eighth, hadn't done his job. They're gone so early now. Can you, it's probably a very elementary primer for you to do this, but can you explain to me and to everyone else the sort of lessening, decreasing value of starting pitching?
The Milwaukee Brewers, their manager, Craig Counsell, will say just what you just said, that we want to get away from the labels of starters and relievers. We want to call them outgetters. And they refer to their starting pitcher as the initial outgetter. Now, I think there's a T-shirt opportunity in there somewhere, and I want to be a part of that. But that's it. And like in Gio's case, interesting story. I've heard you many times, and I think I've heard Gene many times say he's killing me with his pace of delivery.
Yes,
that's right.
That's awful. Right.
He's the initial pitch thrower.
Even though he's left-handed.
Initial home run giver up
here. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
The two things that they told him, look, one time through the order, you're pretty good. And that means we're going to use you less, and you can go with a higher velocity and all that. But the other thing they told him was, you have to work at a faster pace. You just have to. And so that's the way they look at it. The Brewers really don't have any starting pitchers. The Rays have one starting pitcher, and so they line up a game and say, okay, who's best to get the first nine outs? Who's going to get the next? And what it does, now long-term, people will say, now that's going to ruin the game, the disabled list and all that. Long-term, we don't know how you can fare over a long season because you're probably going to have to use 25 or 30 pitchers. You're going to be sending guys up and down. One of the things players have talked about is it's going to affect salary. If you know, if you limit service time and all that, is this a way to get outs, or is this a way to control costs and all of that? But the bottom line, I do still think that if you have a young arm, you're gonna value that arm and try to make it a 7-8 inning pitcher.
Right.
But in a previous generation where you would send a kid to the minor leagues and have him stretch out his arm, to use a baseball term, now you're just going to have him in the big leagues pitching 2 or 3 innings. So Milwaukee is the best example. They just say, how do we get 27 outs tonight? How do we get 27 outs tomorrow night? You know, so after using the Dodgers and Brewers used 16 pitchers last night, 32 strikeouts, so it'll be interesting to see how many out-getters the Brewers have tonight, whereas the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw. Whose shoes would you rather be in?
So it's an interesting thing, because the Verlanders and the Kershaws,
right,
and the Max Scherzers become dinosaurs right before your eyes. What I said early, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I looked at the four managers who were out there who didn't seem to have a tremendous amount of experience as big league managers. Maybe Hinch has the most. And I postulated that we're seeing the takeover, that the general managers compose the team and run the team and pick a
right
field manager who is in sync with that general philosophy, that the Buck Showalters, the Tommy Lasorders, you know, that this isn't what they do anymore. Or am I wrong about that?
No, you're 100% right. There's a culture war going on, the nerds and the cavemen. But think about it. If you watch the movie Moneyball, this idea that there was a brick wall, this is really bad in the NBA too, but that their idea that there's a brick wall between us in the clubhouse and them upstairs.
Right.
They are against us. That was always ridiculous. And so now that wall has to come down. And if you get a managerial job, you're told, we're going to collaborate here, and we're going to help you on the lineup. There are going to be days we're going to tell you your lineup. We're going to help you with defensive alignments. And you have to go, you have to take a job willing to listen to all kinds of suggestions, all these managers you're talking about. So A.J. Hinch in Houston, he's a Stanford grad, a psychology degree from Stanford.
Ooh.
His job, and he was run out of Arizona, and people thought, that little guy will never work in this game again. He is now the prototype for what you want, because what you want is to be comfortable with the information and to be able to sell it to the players. That is the tough part of it, is because you may come in one day and you're hitting second. You may come in the next day and you're not in the lineup. And you have to accept that things are done a different way. And in terms of the bullpenning, the opener, you know, we talked about pitch a closer in the first inning because that's your highest scoring inning and all that. Pitchers don't like it. And Dallas Keuchel just ripped it to shreds the other day. And but what we have is a wave of information. The Milwaukee GM came from Houston. He's an Ivy League guy, all of that. And the Brewers owner, Mark Antanasio, was touring MIT a few years ago, and he ran into a kid doing gaming. And the kid says to him, I do some baseball on the side. And Mark thought, hell, right, what do you do? And he goes, no, the Astros have me on retainer. I'm studying the optimal time to steal a base in a game. And he was so impressed that, and I said to Jeff Luno, I said, what do you get out of something like that? He goes, you don't get anything out of it most of the time. But if you don't ask the question, you don't know. That's the age we're living in. There's a mountain, an avalanche of information.
Right, right.
They haven't figured out quite how much of it to use, how much to give it to the players, because you still want your hitter to go to home plate with an uncluttered mind. But in terms of what pitches a pitcher throws and what situations, boy, a lot of that is dictated. I mean, that's how pitchers come to Houston. Dave Shiner wrote a great story about this, and get better, because it's pitch usage, it's delivery, it's exploiting weaknesses, and all of that. That, you know, that's why we're seeing paranoia all over the place.
And yet, Richie, the two mistakes.
Cameras in every right ballpark, and so who's stealing what?
Well, what I was going to point out is that the two most easy second guesses last night were of Hinch, of taking out Keuchel too soon, even though he had no strikeouts, he seemed to be doing fine, and of
right
keeping Osuna in there when he was imploding. He didn't even have a guy in the bullpen warming up at that point, right? He couldn't go to anybody.
What he wanted out of Keuchel.
Right.
I think by the time Osuna hit somebody, he was going to try. You're right. It was wrong in hindsight.
Right. It's hindsight.
He thought he could get it back, and just, you know, it's one of those things that blew up in his face.
Okay. So let me move on a little bit to, well, you, because you see Houston all the time. Wilbon hates Alex Bregman. I love Alex Bregman. I love him. He trolled the other pitcher, a term I just learned yesterday.
No.
No, he didn't troll Uvaldi?
No, he did, but you knew the word troll.
I knew it as a bridge troll. I mean, I'm learning these new things. I think I love Alex Bregman, but how is he viewed down there?
He is beloved. When he first comes up, he's the second pick in the draft. He still has a grudge against the guy that was the number one pick in the draft. That was Dansby Swanson of the Braves.
A shortstop, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right. I can tell you 100 stories. One is, they look around. Carlos Beltran pointed this out. He goes, look at this kid. He's playing cards one day with the Latinos. He's over there playing dominoes with the relievers the next day. He became bilingual. He forced himself to learn Spanish so he could speak with all his teammates. At the end of last season, he goes to Jose Altuve and says, what do I need to get better? Because Altuve was a good player and made himself a great player. And he goes, Pilates. He says, you need to strengthen your core. And he gets to spring training and says, you know what? In a strikeout era, good players still walk. You look at the best players, they still draw walks. Mike Trout draws walk.
Bryce Harper.
Joey Votto draws walk. Sure. He disciplined himself in the strike zone, all of that. But I'm telling you, he's a little fiery guy. So Matt Chapman of the Oakland A's is a great player. He's a great third baseman. They come to town, and A.J. Hinch says to Bregman, he goes, that guy Chapman, he's pretty good. He goes, I'll tell you what, if he outplays you today, you're not playing tomorrow. something like that. Whoa. But if you outplay him, you can hit wherever you want to in the lineup. Something like that. So it's a 0-0 game. Bregman homers in like the second inning or first. He's running around the bases screaming into the dugout, and people are looking like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? And that's the things they do. I mean, he burns a competitive fire that's off the charts. Last year, early in the season, he wasn't in the lineup, and he didn't like it. And he went to A.J., and A.J. said to him, look, I need to get Marwin Gonzalez some at-bats, so I put the names of all the infielders in a hat and, you know, drew one out. He goes, oh, you drew my name out. He goes, no, I drew Correa's name out, but I put the name back in there and drew again. Yeah, but listen to this. He came up too early, maybe. He was 0 for 30 or 1 for 30 or something. AJ calls him in. This is the psychology part of it, and says, look, I'm moving you from 7th in the lineup. This kid's just starting out, and you know what the Twitter world is telling him? Get this kid out of here. He can't play. AJ says, I'm moving you from 7th in the lineup to 2nd, and that reflects what I think of you and what the organization thinks of you. So he built a relationship that he could joke with him about that. He's a cornerstone type player, boy.
The other thing that we talked about at the beginning is
when and let me just say this: yeah. I love the guy, and his teammates love the guy.
Well, you watch these games. You watch the Dodgers, in particular the Dodgers. They don't play the same lineup twice. I mean, they've got all these really good hitters, and you look around and you go, "Well, they're not in the game. They're not in the game." Again, the baseball that I grew up with had 8 everyday players and a pitcher who you asked to go into the 8th inning at least.
And pretty much the same lineup every day,
yes,
too.
It's really different now.
The same batting order.
Do you care? And that's the thing. Like, I did a talk show in L.A., and they were saying analytics is ruining the game. I said,
well, I don't think it's ruining it. It's changing.
Well, like, why do you care where the left fielder stands? I mean, like, why do you care what pitch Justin Verlander throws Manny Machado in the 8th inning? That's the information age we live in. But you're right, it's different, and it's so specialized that you can find a niche. For instance, Steve Pierce hit what amounted to the biggest hit of the game,
yeah, home run,
in Houston last night. Here was a guy that didn't have a role in the game. Look at how, I think he's been with 8 organizations, released 100 times. People figured out if you can put this guy in there in certain situations, and it's not just against left-handed or right-handed, there are pitcher's delivery that match his swing. The guy is now like one of the most, like every team tries to get Steve Pierce at the trade deadline.
It's really revolutionary. I'm finding myself enjoying it, but I have to pay more attention or sit there and say to somebody I'm with, who's that guy? Who's that guy? So, Richie, thank you so very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Richard Justice of MLB.com. It doesn't matter what you ask him. He has a story, that Bregman story with Hinch. Man, come on. These are great stories. We will take a break. We will come back with news.
That's right.
Yes, news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Quip ad. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth, yet most of us don't do it properly. I don't know. I mean, you put the toothbrush in your mouth.
You put toothpaste on it first?
Yeah, I do. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. It has sensitive sonic vibrations, gentle enough on your sensitive gums. Why? Because people brush too hard and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. It has a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides. How many sides do you have? Helping guide a full and even clean. Why? Up to 90% of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes or don't clean evenly. 2 minutes is a really long time to brush your
teeth.
That's
the recommended length.
2 minutes is a long time. It has a multi-use cover which mounts to your mirror and unmounts to slide over your bristles for on-the-go brushing. Why? It declutters your sink or cabinet and makes traveling with an electric toothbrush easier. I've never traveled with an electric toothbrush. I've traveled with handheld, regular toothbrushes.
Well, it's well, wait till you get the Quip and get your electric.
Quip doesn't require a clunky charger.
When is that going to arrive?
I have no idea, and runs for 3 months on one charge. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. As I've said this before, unlike what I usually do, which is use them
for
12 to 15 years.
And then I clean the grout in the shower with them.
Right. Why? Because 3 out of 4 of us use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. And then it says to me that I have to say why you love Quip.
Let me count the ways.
I don't have one yet. I don't love it yet. I'm willing to be swept off my feet. But I don't have one yet. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/TonyK right now, you get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip, getquip.com/TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This again is Jim Lifson's band, The Wayback Machine. This is called Bluegrass Gumbo. It's the absolutely true story that tells the tale of what happened when our guitar player, Tom Woolley, took his then-girlfriend, Kentucky Bluegrass native Mary Dam Buckley, back to Mobile, Alabama to meet his family, and where she completely wowed them with her cooking. And not just any cooking, but gumbo cooking, the local Gulf Coast specialty for the folks that knew it the best, as the song will attest. The tune is filled with lots of clever wordplay that even you non-English majors will enjoy. Unfortunately, the relationship didn't last, but they still talk about the bluegrass gumbo, which, come to think of it, will look pretty cool on the chatter menu right under Wilbon's chili. If I can find the recipe, Mary still talks to me. You can have that, no charge. This is a lovely tune.
Isn't it?
This is the Wayback Machine, and I'm partial to it because one of the guys in the band is a Long Island boy.
Oh.
Nigel, if people want to send, we usually ask Michael, and Michael ain't here.
It's my time to shine. Yeah. Here we go. You can send us your songs to jingles@TonyKornheiserShow.com. We ask that you're actually part of the band, and if you are not part of the band, say, oh, my great high school friend is in this band.
No.
He's got to email us. They have to email us as well with their permission.
And we're doing Johnny O.
Wally Pip.
Oh, yes.
We love Johnny O, so we're doing this. Johnny O. The code is TK4, right?
I believe that's correct, yes.
If it isn't, just try it. See if that works.
Yeah, just yell representative.
They have
many
lovely,
people's
lovely clothing.
Number
I got
one
a catalog in front of
TK and Fall. I'm wearing the Johnny O today, by the way.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard people talk about clothes like this since I was a teenage girl. This reminds me of when you guys talk about
Johnny
O.
That's sort of the experience Tone's trying to replicate.
My teenage girl years, we talked about clothing all the time. It's sort of interesting in that I do like the product. It's primarily, it's got a lot of golf stuff, but it's not just golf stuff. And I really like the product.
I
like Johnny O.
Yeah, I rest my case.
All right, I'll stop on that. So we have news, Nigel. We have news.
We do indeed, Mr. Tony. And we will start out with Nick Bosa decided that he's going to leave Ohio State. He entered his some sort of core muscle.
Something.
Core injury.
Yes, core injury.
He had an operation.
And I believe it was week three against TCU. They didn't say when he would come back. And now he said,
You know, Ohio State.
I do like Ohio State.
You know how good this guy is.
He's really good.
This guy's...
He still leads a team in sacks.
This guy...
Does he have another brother?
Mel Kiper says he's the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Okay, his older brother, Joey Bosa, was the number two or three pick in the draft. His old man, John Bosa, was picked in the first round and played with the Dolphins for a while. This is a football family. There are a lot of people who are saying, well, how can you do – what do you mean you're quitting?
I got no issue.
You
got
to rah, rah, rah for great Ohio State. You got to do this. Let's explain the world to these people. This kid went to Ohio State as a trade school. He wanted to get ready for the occupation he knew he was going to have and he's qualified for, professional football. He doesn't want to get hurt again and hurt his standing in the draft. This is how it works. Some people go to college to pursue a very specific occupation, and when they're ready to go, they go.
Right.
All right. Urban Meyer, for whom I have very little, if any, regard outside of his coaching prowess.
Right.
Because I think he lied repeatedly on this Zach Smith stuff. Repeatedly. I don't think much of his character. He said, we would have liked to have kept them, but we understand. And that's the position you have to take. That's the John Calipari position
right. In
basketball. You're there to prepare this kid for the next level. Because you're recruiting kids like that because you're that good. Kentucky, Duke, they recruit basketball players that good. Ohio State, Alabama, they recruit football players that good. And then of course,
by the way,
Urban Meyer bothered. Do you believe...
Like, unfortunately, when you lie a lot, sometimes people don't believe you even when you tell the truth.
Right.
As we have a lot of current evidence of. So, Urban Meyer, to me, that is the complete appropriate response. And I think from, like, a recruiting standpoint, that has to be your position.
Absolutely.
But I wonder if he even believes that or if he's angry and wants to
get. Here's the first thing he said about him in praise of him. He's very strong in his faith. Shut up with that.
Right.
Just stop with that.
Now,
stop with that.
If you're an NFL team, though, and you haven't seen this kid play this entire season practically, are you still going to draft him first?
You get tape on him. You send him to the combine.
Okay.
And you look him over like you look over when you're buying a camel.
Right.
And you look at its teeth and all of that stuff, you know, like you see in the movies. That's
and
what you
do. He's not just quitting the team. He's leaving
school,
not taking class.
Well,
yeah, I got no problem. I have no problem.
I got no problem. But if you are a Buckeye fan, man, you've got this guy's target.
You're angry.
Yeah. But he
because
wasn't going
to
help
him
you
to play
this year
Michigan,
well,
and then you want him to play Alabama in the championship.
That's all. I mean, really, just you want him to play in Michigan. That's the game that you really care about.
That's
but he's been great, and like you said, he could be the number one pick in the draft.
You can't,
why would you jeopardize that?
You can't
that?
Let this kid, if you're the family, you can't let this kid get hurt.
I wonder if you'll start to see more and more of this.
Well, last year or 2 years ago, right before the draft,
that's
Christian
right.
McCaffrey. At Stanford.
Said,
I'm not playing in a bowl game.
That's right.
Not playing in a bowl game.
But he was healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was healthy.
Said, I'm getting ready for the
next
thing.
Although, to your point, if you're there to get an engineering degree, and halfway through your junior year, they say, you know what, we think you're ready, you're going, right? And that's essentially what's going on here.
There are certain things, like to be a doctor, you must graduate from college. Well, I don't know if you have to graduate from college.
You have to
graduate from med school.
Right.
You have to graduate from med school.
Right.
To be a lawyer, you got to pass the bar. Maybe you don't have to go to law school. I don't know.
I think you just have to pass the bar.
To write for a newspaper, you don't really have to have a degree.
Podcast?
You don't need any.
Radio,
you know.
There is significant training in school.
Engineering.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
If you're any better than a C student,
think
you're
about
out.
All those like computer whiz kids. You know, if like you know, Google comes after you when you're like 17.
Right. So let's go back in history, not that far back. The three most important people in the computer technological revolution in this country are Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and Paul Allen. Sadly, two are gone now. What did they all have in common? They dropped out of school.
Right.
They had a better idea, and they said, let's get to it.
Ain't nobody got time for this.
Yeah, so go ahead. What else?
Mary Bono, welcome to your job as president and CEO of U.S. Gymnastics. Oh, wait a minute. 4 days in, She steps down. That because she was immediately criticized by several high-profile
Allie Raceman and Simone Biles.
Yeah, question right away. Her association with the law firm, I'm going to mispronounce that, just the law firm which had advised USA Gymnastics during the Larry Nassar sex abuse scandal. And I guess she'd also sent out a tweet where she'd blacked out the Nike
logo.
Took
a run at Nike.
Yeah, at Nike with, for Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. And so she was sort of attacked by
Hello,
that.
Hello, goodbye
yes,
to Mary Bono. That's right. And she's done the right thing by walking away because it's not going
to
work.
It just goes to show you how much power these young gymnasts now have, which they would never have
right.
before. They were these little silent pixies.
Yep.
Those young women have been empowered.
They're going to have to run the next person by those
That's
women.
Oh, right.
Absolutely.
They're going to have to make sure that Allie Raceman and Simone Biles and about 400 others say, we're okay with this.
Yep.
We're okay with this.
You know what's
this.
Weird? Her tweet, it's not like, this wasn't like DiVincenzo's tweets from high school. The tweet was in September. It's like, didn't they look at like her timeline and anything?
I'm not sure. I think there are still a lot of people out there sort of like me that know there is an internet, but don't know the ramifications.
And don't know what trolling means.
You know, don't know everything that's going on. And they just go, yeah. oh. Oh. Ooh, I didn't know that. So, okay.
Yeah, this is Bono's statement. It is with profound regret coupled with...
I think it's pronounced Bono.
Is it Bono? Oh, yeah. There you go. With a profound regret coupled with a deep love for the sport of gymnastics and respect for those who aspire to be great gymnasts that I today tendered my resignation as interim CEO of USA Gymnastics. My withdrawal comes in the wake of these personal attacks that, left undefended, would have made my leading USAG a liability for the organization.
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Mr. Tony... there's an important story I want to talk about in with Turkey and with Saudi Arabia, and we'll get to that in a second. But a more important story right now, I want to make sure that you are all right. There's a report that three people, that's one, two, three people in Northwest D.C. were attacked by a rabid
that's
raccoon.
That's so close to my house.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's about 6 to 8 blocks from my house. I saw when I was
talking on the phone.
Yeah, we're on the phone. I was driving up Nebraska Avenue last night. And at the corner of Nebraska and 32nd Street, there was a stand-up being done by one of the local networks because that's where they apparently found the rabid raccoon and quickly killed the rabid raccoon. And Nigel said to me, go ahead, do you remember what you said?
About the raccoon and the iguana?
No, that they run in packs of six.
Oh, yes, they do.
Six packs.
Yes.
So they run what is a rabbit raccoon? Is that like a jackalope? You know, like a hybrid
exactly.
species?
Yeah. Yeah, so when you see them walking chess early in the morning, they do like to, you know, roam in gangs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so be careful.
We are all,
that.
As all reasonable people are, we are afraid of raccoons.
Terrified.
They don't
back
down.
Raccoons, normal, nocturnal, non-rabid raccoons aren't coming at you.
No, there's
they're not
nothing
like, come get me, bro.
That's right. But they're not afraid of you at all.
No, they're not.
They're not.
But these rabid ones,
and they're out in daylight.
They're leading the revolution.
That's
they're coming out in the daytime.
By the way, with foxes and raccoons, that's how you know they're rabid.
No, you're wrong.
Yeah, I am wrong?
You're wrong about foxes.
Foxes you'll see in the daytime.
Yes, foxes.
Oh, I thought you didn't. I thought they're only at night.
No, yeah. Uh-uh. Raccoons, yes, but foxes.
I'd stay away from foxes, too. Foxes are also much bigger than you think they are.
Yes.
And fast. They
are very
fast.
Sharp teeth as well.
They're fast. Like, if you think you're going to outrun a fox, you're crazy.
No, I don't think anyone thinks that.
Oh, they don't?
No.
But you had that story when you first moved to D.C., where you walked out into your alleyway, the garbage can, and there was a huge raccoon that just looked
right
just
on
looking
top,
at you.
Just looking at me. And I said, I'll be going inside now. No, that was, I'd never seen a raccoon before.
What does Chessie do when she sees a raccoon?
To my knowledge, she's never seen a raccoon.
Okay.
She is intrigued by deer.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that deer are different than dogs. There's a posture with dogs that is much more aggressive than her posture with deer. Deer are a curiosity to her as they walk down the middle of the street.
Yeah. She knows deer are different than dogs.
Yeah.
Smart animal.
Yeah. I referenced this a moment ago. The investigation going on the case of missing Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
What do we know about this?
We believe is that
he was... I understand what we believe.
What the Turkish officials are reporting is that he was lured into the Saudi embassy in Turkey, in Istanbul, to complete some paperwork so he could get married. He'd been there a few days.
He walked straight in.
He'd been there a few days earlier.
And never walked out.
He told associates,
apparently not.
I don't know about this, but went and said everything was fine, so they called him back in. Doesn't appear to have left again, and now there are these reports that...
Oh, he left again.
Well,
not in his form, not in the form that he walked in.
Right.
For anyone that has seen certain episodes of The Americans... or any episode of Dexter.
Start chopping people up. Put them in
carry-on luggage.
What has been reported is that there was a Saudi hit team that arrived that day, and some bloke who just happened to have a bone saw in his luggage.
That's what we're being told.
Yeah, and so now...
I think the people sitting around these microphones are more prone to believe this than the person sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yes.
Who is clinging to the notion that this could have been a rogue operation.
The king denied any knowledge of it. Yeah. So, gotta believe him.
Hugely.
He denied it.
Hugely lavish.
Isn't it... am I mistaken? Isn't it possible that the king... Didn't know that is that, that there's a crown prince.
It's possible.
Who's,
it's possible.
Isn't it being
crown
sort of
prince
attached to him?
Right.
Yes.
That he's the muscle man.
Right. Yeah, so Saudi crown prince Mohammed bin Salman. And he's meeting right now with your Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. This was Trump's statement of the whole thing. Here we go again with, you know, you're guilty and until proven innocent.
Okie dokie then.
So,
what else?
The bone saw does tend to implicate one.
It does.
I mean,
to
it's
me.
Not like reaching like wildly to that conclusion. Well,
I just forgot it was in my bag.
Notion that has been floated that the Saudis are going to issue a statement saying essentially how this was an interrogation that went wrong. An interrogation to which they brought a bone saw.
That's right.
Which
I mean,
is
come
not,
on. Come
not
on.
Not
well,
real
and
promising.
Then they keep referring to here's a new euphemism. It was might have been a retention that had gone bad.
Right.
A retention, meaning, Mr. Khashoggi, we are going to retain you and drag you back to Saudi Arabia.
Right, and if you don't want to do that, we have a response.
which might go sideways.
You'll end up being food for guppies.
And a fun morning for a lot of people in Canada, particularly in Newfoundland, where a legal national marijuana marketplace began sales just this morning in Newfoundland. Canada has...
I think it's pronounced Newfoundland.
Oh, is it Newfoundland?
Newfoundland.
Okay,
yes,
there you go. They have legalized recreational marijuana.
I think it started out as the Newfoundland, but it's... I think the Newfies, and by the way, that is an insult to call them Newfies.
Yes,
we've
learned
that. Is Newfoundland.
Because we do
We had a Cliffy from there.
Yes,
who's a wonderful kid.
And we have emails from our littles there. But they have legalized recreational marijuana.
Only in that province? Or
no,
I thought it was the whole country?
No, the whole country.
Right,
the whole country.
What I thought.
And they will pardon all those with convictions for possessing up to 30 grams of marijuana, which is now the legal threshold.
Well, that's
threshold.
A little late for that, isn't it? I mean, they've been sitting in the cooler for a while.
Well,
it's, you know,
I think if you can get out, you know, you're excited about those prospects.
Yeah, and here's a parting gift for you as you leave. Here's a suit. Enjoy yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So there you go.
Very lovely. We'll have Old Guy Radio. There's a couple of very specific things I want to talk about in Old Guy Radio when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Now let me talk to you about Lowe's. And by the way, let me stress that although this is about Craftsman products, and I don't know that if this is about Lowe's in general or just very specifically the Craftsman tools, but Jen Babish, who works for Lowe's, has helped us in acquiring a washer and a dryer, which came to the house yesterday.
That sounds lovely.
So we'll see how that works out, but I'm very grateful for
someone to hook it up, I presume.
Well, we got, Crop Metcalf came in and attached the gas dryer, which the people who delivered it were not allowed to do.
Right.
And the washing machine was electric, and so that went right in. Haven't used it yet. I'm very anxious to use it. And by very anxious, I mean I hope someone in my house uses this besides me. Let me tell you about Lowe's, my new go-to destination for Craftsman products. They have everything I need to help me tackle projects around my home, from mechanics tool sets to tool storage and more, both in-store and online. One of the cool and different things you'll find in the Lowe's Craftsman lineup are the mechanics tool sets in gunmetal finish. Gunmetal chrome finish is corrosion resistant. That means the tools are more durable, longer lasting, and the best part, if you're a stickler about cleaning your tools, it makes them easier to do so. There's a 51-piece and an 81-piece mechanics tool set in the gunmetal chrome finish. And the set comes with the new industry-leading Craftsman 120-tooth ratchet, which offers extreme accessibility. I'm not a ratchet guy, okay? My experience with Ratchet is in the Ken Kesey novel. I'm with Nurse Ratchet. I don't know much about ratchets, but I will tell you this, that if one of your projects happens to be in a really tight space to get to, then you definitely need to check out this 120-tooth ratchet. It has a 3-degree arc swing, and that means you can loosen or tighten bolts with less movement in those hard-to-reach spots. With its slim head and 3-degree arc swing, you can get into narrow spaces with ease and quickly tighten or loosen any fastener. Lowe's and Craftsman are both deeply rooted in heritage and quality. Like their customers, these two brands have a shared passion for hands-on doing. Lowe's and Craftsman make it easy to tackle any auto or do-it-yourself project on your list. And there are people sitting in this room, like Gary Braun, who actually can do these things. I can't. but that doesn't mean I can't tell you that these products are good. So shop the new home of Craftsman today at Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony.
And by the way, I should have said this while we were in the actual show for those that listened through the ad, and I hope you did. James Carver will, in fact, be with us next. I just got a text from James.
Oh, he will be? He will be. On Old Guy?
Yes.
Okay, great.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Gary Puckett in the Union Gap. Get out of my mind. And you're saying, why would you play this for Old Guy Radio?
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Why? It is terrible.
Okay, well, because I said the other day when we did something with Jay and the Americans, and I said that Jay Black could really hit. He had a lot of range and could hit big-time notes. And we thought of Gary Puckett, who could hit big-time notes. Not that, you know, I mean, if you want to dress up as a soldier, it's sort of stupid. But I thought he could hit big notes. And now upon hearing it, it's not as good as I hoped
and,
it would be.
Singing a sappy song.
Yeah,
so
Nigel has stuff about the song, though. Well, this was the first big hit, Young Girl.
Yes, in 1968. And we're playing this because it's Gary Puckett's 78th birthday today, as
great.
Fate would have it. This song was written, and by the way, born and spent the first few years of his life in Hibbing, Minnesota.
Right.
That's right, home of Robert Zimmerman.
He's the not Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Very much so.
So you know who else is from Hibbing?
Kevin McHale. That's right. Yeah. The song was written and produced by Jerry Fuller, and he explained the inspiration for this song. I was on the road a lot as an artist, fronting various groups for many years. I guess every entertainer goes through a time when young women look like 20-year-olds. That's somewhat of an inspiration, not from my own experience, just knowing that it happens.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, sure. So plausible deniability from Mr.
Fuller. Bit of a dodgy song
there. Yes. Well, we always do that.
Yes.
All right, so we've moved on from that in the area of critical commentary. We've moved on to James Carville, who missed us last week, coming out of a 2-1 week. I mean, Carville had a good week and missed last week. I don't know what the games are now. You must feel great, at least, that your alma mater crushed Georgia, right?
It was unbelievable. It was a great, great game to go to. I mean, it was a priceless tap. I tell you what, if we beat Mississippi State at the Alabama game, that place could self-combust. Right?
Yeah.
You watch it on television, and it's like a, you know, a square foot of ashes. And so I said, well, geez, 103,000 people here a minute ago. And then they just everybody caught on fire, man.
I don't know that there's any place where I like watching an 8 o'clock game more. I
mean, no, it's the best place on earth.
It's incredible.
It's the best place on earth. What do you have for us this week, James?
Well, speaking of Bob Dylan and Gary Puckett, they're going to meet in Knoxville. And Gary Puckett is Tennessee, and Bob Dylan is Alabama. But I'm going to take Gary Puckett in 29 points.
You are going to take that. Now, Alabama is the best team in the country, but they don't care about the spreads. They haven't covered that much this year, right? They really haven't.
Not done. And they're good. They're really good. But they, you know, they can get lax on Missouri, play them for a little bit. A&M played them for a little bit. But, I mean, you know, 29 points, it's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points in Knoxville. And by the way, it is possible Tua won't play. It is possible Jalen Hurts will play, although Jalen Hurts has killed them.
Or maybe gets rested. Yeah. Maybe they get up and he gets rested. So.
Okay. All right, so you got Tennessee. Go ahead.
I got it. And then we got another kind of Bob Dylan, Gary Puckett game in West Lafayette, Indiana.
That's Purdue and Ohio State, right?
Ohio State, right. And Purdue is getting 13, going to buy the hook in 14, and we're going to figure out a Gary Puckett fall take on you.
So you're going to take
Purdue plus 14.
Purdue plus 14.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Dogs against the number one and number two team in the country. And I was not going to do this, but I got too many good vibes coming out of LSU locker room. Mississippi State beat them bad last year. I don't think they're going to get caught sleeping looking for Alabama because they're going to buy. And 6.5 points to me, given the way they're playing right now, might be. Might not be overly generous to Mississippi State, so I'm going to take LSU.
So I'm saying 6.5 minus 05, so we can call it 6 for you, James.
LSU minus 6.
Since you're a frequent flyer,
LSU minus 6 against
Mississippi State.
Mississippi State. They play pretty well this year. They have. They play pretty well.
They're not bad. That's probably only minus 6, and we're playing at home. And, you know, we're number 5 team in the country. The bettors still don't like LSU that much. Yeah, they got these quants, and they say they don't gain enough on second down. Who knows? As long as you're there at the end of the game, I guess that's what counts. Huh?
By the way, the Saints, when you picked them over the Redskins, they rewarded you quickly
mightily.
And well. They did.
And I thought one or two times correctly that Mark Ingram would just make a lot of difference in the internet lineup, and I think he did. It's not even when he touches. The fact that he's there, I think, helped Drew Brees immensely.
Oh, I think that's definitely true.
Yeah.
Being in New Orleans for 10 years concurrent with Drew Brees is kind of one of the great privileges in life, you know. I mean, he's only the greatest. The only way that he's really the best ever is without total yards, touchdowns, you know, completion percentage, that, you know, that kind of mundane stuff.
Only statistically.
Yeah.
Like, if only if you count, like, hits and home runs and, you know, OPS, that's all. Right. That's almost anything. You don't count that. Yeah, he was pretty good.
Thank you, James.
All right.
James Carville, boys and girls. I think we have to bleep one word of that. And
Tennessee,
that's okay.
Purdue, and LSU. Okay. James's place this week.
I don't know about Purdue. I mean, they're not a good team. I know they're home.
Not
Ohio
a lot of
State.
Points. Yeah.
Ohio State is a good team. All right. I want to bring this up because of there's two things I want to bring up in old guy. One is an. I'm losing my hearing. I'm losing my hearing because I'm an old man. And I'm not losing my hearing because something traumatic happened to me.
Well, we went to rock concerts and sat right next to the amps.
I understand.
Stuck drugs in your ears.
A few years ago, I went to the hearing guy, and he gave me a hearing test, and he said, you have the hearing of a 75-year-old man, because I was almost a 75-year-old man. And I also, for the last 20 years, I've put stuff in my ears in order to do radio and television. So I understand why I've lost hearing. And that's why I want Magic Ear by Atomic Beam. I have now watched. This is a commercial.
Atomic Ear?
It's not. I thought it was
magic
an Atomic Ear. It's Magic Ear. Where they say, I can hear a pin drop from 100 feet away. And no one tells me that. Hunter Ellis. Hunter Ellis does this commercial. He's a young man in a fighter pilot suit in front of a jet plane. And it says, former fighter pilot. And he says, you want to hear better because obviously the noise emanating from a jet plane is enormous. And I'm so sold on Magic Ear. One of the things they say is you hold it in your hand. Now what it is, it's an attachment. It's an earplug that you put in your ear that is attached to something that looks sort of like a transistor radio. And I guess it just amplifies sound. They tell you can hear a pin drop from 100 feet away. Not that I really want to.
So this isn't going to please you, but I'm looking at the reviews on Amazon. 20% 5-star, so you got a 1 in 5 shot.
Right.
4% 4-star, 12% 3-star, 8% 2-star, and the runaway favorite with 56% of the votes, 1-star ratings. For the
is one good?
No,
five
one
good.
Would be I mean, no good.
And here's
number
the problem.
One is always good.
What?
It would amplify all sound. It wouldn't select like what you wanted to hear. So there'd
you can
be
watch
like
TV.
An obnoxious woman sitting next to you in a restaurant.
Well,
that
I wouldn't.
You would
I wouldn't
hear.
Use it. I wouldn't use it in a restaurant.
You just turn it down at that point.
The best part was it said you can. They said you can hold it in your hand and nobody sees it. And then they show it to you and you go. Nobody sees it unless they look in your hand.
Because
it's a transistor radio.
Yeah, but no one sees your hand during the podcast. Yes. No one sees your hand during the TV show.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know.
Oh, I don't need it there because I have stuff in my
this
ear anyway. Or as Patrick Waugh said, I can't hear you because the Stanley Cup rings are stuffed in my ear. But are you losing your hearing?
I don't think so.
Your hearing is just as good as ever?
Yeah. I mean, in spite of what I subjected my ears to in my youth.
I can't.
I'm with you.
I'm always using headphones.
The headphones have destroyed. I mean, I'm like Pete Townsend at this point.
Yeah, I can't hear anything. And I have to put the TV way up all the time.
Oh, my neighbors hate me. It's just, deafening.
Well, I'm at
your neighbors
age,
hate you anyway.
Well, that's true.
And I don't know if you've always worn glasses, Tone.
I started in my late 40s, early 50s.
Okay, so I am at that age now where I've gone to the eye doctor and said, I've noticed, when I drive at night, things are a little fuzzy and my arms need to get longer and longer.
I'm great at long distance driving. I'm great at seeing street signs.
And he didn't tell me I had the eyes of a 75-year-old, but essentially with the touch of an axe murderer, he was like, yeah, this is what happens.
That's right.
It's like, your eyes are going away. That's what happens, dummy.
Yeah.
You're sitting between me and Tony. Haven't you learned?
No, I hadn't, and it's hard.
What I liked the most about the thing was not that it was called Magic Ear. It was that it was Atomic Beam.
Yes.
Atomic well, Beam
branding
makes
tone.
This.
Yeah.
Give me that.
Atomic.
Me
anything
that
with
ear.
Atomic is yeah, good, isn't
branding.
It?
Yeah.
It
you
have
and anything with a fighter pilot or like Tonto Peranto,
right.
a former
right.
Navy SEAL, maybe. Well, you know, maybe. Anything with a Navy SEAL is good.
Only would have yeah. been better if he was wearing a lab coat. On top.
And there's, the best thing is you can't see it when you have it in your hand.
If you have a really big hand yes. and you cover it up and put your hand in your pocket, then you can't see it.
I wonder how many people know what a transistor radio is.
Oh. Also, there's transistor. A painting. And Jeannie's an artist.
Oh, yes.
And so we call on Jean for this. There was a painting that was featured in the Washington Post yesterday. It's a painting of a bunch of former and current Republican presidents sitting around a table with some wine and some
called the Republican soda. Club? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's really yeah. nice. It's got Eisenhower and Ford and both Nixon. Bushes and Nixon and Reagan and Teddy. Trump, Teddy Roosevelt, and Lincoln.
Lincoln.
So, I mean, you think to yourself, wow, could they all have sat together at any given point? The artist's name is Andy Thomas, and I wanted Gene to review this because it, the only thing missing from it is the velvet and the dogs.
Oh, yes.
You know, so what do you think?
Well,
Trump looks good in this.
And he has a Coca-Cola in front of him.
I heard on NPR yesterday an interview with the artist.
Uh-huh.
And he
Thomas.
Said, Andy Thomas, and he said when he painted this.
It's in the White House now.
He made the conscious decision to make them all look as good as he possibly could while still being recognizable.
They look good.
Well, art is what people say it is. I mean, that is my feeling about art. And I don't like to criticize another artist. Art making is hard work.
Very hard.
This is not the kind of painting that I prefer. And although great artists often took images from different places and then assembled them together, like a Caravaggio painting or, you know, something, St. Martin being stabbed to death, shot with arrows or whatever. I don't like paintings that look sort of cut and pasted.
Right.
Although,
But if in art class they said, let's do this, would you do it?
If it was an assignment given to me, I would do it.
And if they said, we want Mick Jagger and John Lennon and Pete Townsend and Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry and Elvis
and
sitting around
Buddy
a table.
Holly.
Yeah, and sitting around a table. Yeah. And nobody in Three Dog Night. Just
no,
people you like.
They wouldn't be at that
just
table.
People you like.
No Chuck Negrin.
But right. I would say.
And not Gary Puckett
that
either.
If that was the assignment for this painting, then it was well executed.
So when I saw this, I mean, my tendency was to laugh. But what I remembered immediately was at a Rehoboth Beach art gallery 4 or 5 years ago on Rehoboth Avenue, something very similar, maybe painted by this guy. I don't really know. Sitting around a table were Barack Obama and Joe Biden and Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, you know,
Kennedy,
I mean,
and
yeah, John Kennedy. Buddy Holly and Gary Puckett.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, yes, this is cheesy, but I might pay $4 for it and hang it up somewhere.
Don't do that.
Not in my
Would
house.
Would you hang it in the Oval Office as it presently
is
hangs?
Is it in the Oval Office?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was just somewhere in the White House.
It's in the Oval Office.
Yes.
Wow. Oh,
wow. Along with like the Gilbert Stuart portraits and things like that, this is yeah. residing next to those.
So it made me think of the artists that I have, that many people have made fun of over the years, like Leroy Neiman and Thomas Kinkade. Leroy Neiman didn't do what Thomas Kinkaid has a signature deal where there's a light in a window.
The painter of light.
Somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leroy Neiman didn't do that.
No.
I mean, his was big, bold, splashy colors. And after a while, you know. So what do you think of that stuff?
Well, Thomas Kinkaid might be the most popular painter in this country. He's no longer with us. But many, many people are attracted to that little light
in the
forest, the light in the window. Yeah. And he's on coffee cups and kitchen aprons and everything. So, again, it's not the kind of painter I aspire to be, but there is no doubting his success, if success can be measured by your popularity and...
In the old days, correct me if I'm wrong, and by the old days, I mean like the 1300s. I'm going back a
while. Yes, all right. I remember.
There were patrons of the arts who basically said, okay, I want you to paint this. And a guy might have said, no. Here's money. Right. Paint that. Paint this portrait of my cat, you know, and make it 10 feet tall, right? That's how.
Yes. And the great revolution in painting.
I think Jim Nance commissioned one of those, didn't he?
Yeah, big oil painting like, in the foyer.
Finally, like in Italy, when they began to paint the common man, they began to paint the merchant, they began to paint the vendor on the street. And all of a sudden, it wasn't the royalty, it wasn't the patrons that were being painted, it was real people being painted. And that was a big, big transformation.
So your thumbs up or thumbs down on this particular painting? Your thumbs sideways.
Well, she said well executed.
Well executed. I don't like to criticize another artist.
I particularly like that word because it reminds me of the John McKay quote when they asked him about the execution of his players in the Tampa Bay game, and he said, "I'm in favor of it."
I would point out that Rehoboth Avenue is not the Louvre.
No, it's not. Well, no, it is certainly.
To some.
It's certainly not.
Would you have been happier if, like, Alex Rodriguez, there was a picture of Trump that was like a half centaur and you know, sitting there in the wild?
Okay, we'll get out of here. We will have email and a jingle when we return, and I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
If you want to control your weight, and if caffeine bothers you, to track your health through your ancestry, you just spit in a tube. So you think that you like ice cream, but you wonder, can I be sure? Well, don't eat that till you've got the results from spitting in a tube. You might be a restless sleeper, it's right there in your genes. Or you could just ask the person you're kicking in your sleep. If it's bitterness that you crave, in the salty stuff you eschew, the principle is the same as Fitbit, plus spitting in a tube.
Brad Weiss, Williamsburg, Virginia.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just,
great.
Just
thank you, Brad.
Brilliant. Love that thing. I have my results. I don't really want to know all of my results, to be very honest with everybody. I don't.
Any Cherokee?
I don't know yet. I think Elizabeth Warren and I go back pretty much the same way. By the way, I will say this. I think if you've lived in the United States for X amount of years, there's a pretty good chance you're 1/64th of just about everything.
Right.
You know, or 1/1000th of just about everything, okay? Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Richard Justice of MLB.com and James Carville for spitting into a phone. I mean, that phone was terrible.
It was pretty bad.
Carville's phone was just terrible.
Yes.
Let me thank our sponsors for today, Quip, ZipRecruiter, and Lowe's. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review. For those of you who think this thing is not being recorded live, that was
since the siren.
Sirens just went by on Wisconsin Avenue. From Trevor Viator, or Viator, I don't know how to pronounce his last name well, but he's the guy that I played against in the Chevy Chase Columbia match. Enjoyed his company very, very much. And he writes, funny clip about me, Pete Evans, and Krilly. See, I did listen.
Oh, I did.
Makes me happy. From Elliot Olshansky in Commack, New York. I don't think there was another Little who was nearly so delighted as I was to hear Mitch Albom talking about his song Hit Somebody on last Thursday's show. I've loved that song since I first heard it at the old Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh in 2006 during a college hockey game between Notre Dame and Robert Morris. I even started using it as a lullaby for my first masculine child, Eitan, while rocking him to sleep during Rangers games, and have recently begun doing the same with his younger brother, Nathaniel. I didn't realize that Buddy the Goon actually dies at the end of the song. Now I have to worry about whether I'm traumatizing my kids for life with my lullaby choices. Oh well, still better than singing about how they're going to fall out of a tree when the branch breaks. Best regards from Suffolk County, where I recently invented a new portmanteau to describe the feeling of joy that comes from a bad beat for a certain Meet the Press host, Todd Freuda. I like that. Chuck Todd Freuda.
I like that.
Jeff Rickson in Fairfax, Virginia. On Monday's podcast, you were discussing Tom Brady and whether or not another athlete had been that prolific for their age. What about Gordie Howe? Howe began his NHL career at the age of 18 in 1946, played 25 seasons until 1971. In 1973, he joined the World Hockey World Hockey Association to play with his sons Mark and Marty, and when the WHA was absorbed by the NHL in 1979, he played one additional NHL season at 51 years of age. He scored 15 goals that season, putting his career total at 801, the most in NHL history, until Wayne Gretzky eclipsed that mark.
And played in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, right?
Gordie Howe is one of the great all-timers. Tom Brady at 41 may be the... I mean, he's still on the level of greatness that Gordie Howe was not on at that age.
That's
Gordie Howe, absolutely. But Tom Brady could win another Super Bowl. It's just sort of amazing. From Brian Martin in San Francisco, yes, Tom Brady at 41 is eye-opening, but it's hardly without precedent, as suggested by discussion on both the podcast and PTI today. Barry Bonds had 45 homers with 101 RBI in 2004 at the age of 40, just 3 years after his 73-homer season. Fun fact, both Bonds and Brady went to the same high school in San Mateo, California, Serra High School. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I
right.
think the reason we back away from Barry Bonds a little bit is our assumption that he was using steroids at that point. Now, maybe Tom Brady is too, and he hasn't been caught. But Barry Bonds, great.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely great. Paul from Bowmanville, Ontario, Canada. Brock Osweiler's first start as a Dolphin, he beat Chicago. First start as a Texan, he beat Chicago. First start as a Bronco, he beat Chicago. What would Wilbon say about this?
Probably wouldn't be surprised.
Matt Mangan in Sitges, Spain. In Spain. I listened with interest as USG3 Chuck Todd and others talked at length about your sleep-inducing methods of counting states alphabetically or presidents sequentially. I think it was Kevin.
Well, it wasn't
it was
I.
Kevin.
Yeah, it was Kevin.
Those are child's play compared to my tried and true method. Naming your favorite editors in alphabetical order by last name. Let's see now. Marty Baron, Ben Bradley, Hugh Hefner, Bill Keller, Gene McManus, H.L. Mencken, David Remnick. That's it. I'm off to dreamland. Who am I missing here?
I'm glad to be in that group.
David Hexter.
Select company.
I much enjoyed listening to Mitch's album last week, especially his reminiscences about the Rock Bottom Remainders. 8 years ago, you and I were both at the Rock Bottom Remainders show at the 930 Club with Roger McGinn and Roy Blunt Jr. in tow. It was an entertaining and memorable evening. I bought a souvenir baseball cap to help support their cause, and I still wear it on occasion. Fast forward 8 years to an event I attended last month. I'm wearing the hat, and a young lady, mid-30s, I would guess, comes up to me, notices the hat, and asks me if I'm in the band. I said I was not, but I attended the show, and I love the whole idea of the group. She said she was also at the show, and her dad was in the band. I started running down the list of members, trying to guess who she might be. She then introduced herself as Scott Turow's daughter. The small world strikes again. We had a lovely chat, and I expect we will run into each other again. P.S. If it's Wednesday, I'm a chatter, and I'd be grateful if you would sign one of your old columns that I brought with me. David Hexter, are you here?
Oh,
indeed,
cool.
I will do so.
Very nice.
If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chaputzva to do it.
No chaputzva.
Thank you.
Your motor, come Vertigo, the letter that you order, up to Atlanta, dreaming of a Vanda, nothing sounding better than a cold Vertigo. Coming up Interstate 75, I feel it on the AM, chucking the jive, I'm halfway sleepy and halfway high, an hour out of making and stomp on dry, cold Vertigo, revving up your motor. A letter that you wrote her up to Atlanta, dreaming of Havana, and nothing sounding better than a cold beer to go. Sweetest little pickup you ever seen. Paint job looking like a tangerine. Four speed, four wheel running machine. Come here to go. Revving up your motor. Come here to go. A letter that you wrote her up to Atlanta. Dreaming of Havana. Nothing sounding better than a come here to go. Thank you.
sick pile of empties on the backseat floor. Black and white knocking on my back door. Oh, me to go. Revving up your motor. Told me to go. Letter that you order. Up to Atlanta. Dreaming of Havana. Nothing sounding better than a cold beer to go. I said nothing sounding.
From Tucson, South Alabama. Ain't seen my family since I don't know when. And I brought my Kentucky girlfriend along to introduce her to my kin. On a ride into town from the airport, she was scoring points left and right. Just for good measure, she said it'd be my pleasure to cook supper for you all night. Cindy and Alan on the cat stayed home while Mary went to the store. She bought a mess of okra, shrimp and crab, and I believe I knew what for. She was fixing to serve the local specialty to the folks that do it the best. Bluegrass gumbo on Mobile Bay, well, this would be the acid test. You know it must have been the gumbo. Paved your way into their hearts. It must have been the gumbo. Now they never want us to part. My little bitty sister jumped up and kissed her. Said, welcome to the family. I never thought my brother could find him another at the age of 53. I think it must have been the gumbo that paved your way into their hearts. It must have been the gumbo. Now they never want us to part. My little bitty sister jumped up and kissed her. Said, welcome to the family. I never thought my brother could find him another at the age of 53. Must have been the gumbo that paved your way into our hearts. It must have been the gumbo. Now we never want y'all apart. Now come back, brother, whenever you can, and bring Kentucky woman when you do. She what you need, she what you want, and she makes a mean.